Hello everyone, and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo, episode 390. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and Smash Brothers is one of my favorite games of all time. Joining me, as every week, is James Jones.
I do not want to talk about Smash Brothers until that game comes out.
That's your prerogative.
I will start glassing people.
We also have Guillaume Veillette.
I think, John, you meant specifically Melee, right?
All of them. And John Lindemann.
Party people, your dreams have now been fulfilled.
Indeed.
I mean, so just to start off with, for those of you listening in the bathroom, put on some damn clothes.
Please.
Yeah.
This has become a disturbing trend that makes this whole podcasting process a little bit more awkward for us.
Pause this. Wipe and clean and pull your drawers up and just go somewhere safe.
Hey, I don't think we should hold the listeners to different rules than we hold ourselves.
I've got pants on. I make no other
promises. Let me mute and flush, and I'll get back to you on that.
Great. I don't know if they have this expression in French, Guillaume, but there's the concept of imagining the audience as naked. I think it's worse when you know they might actually be naked.
Oh, God. It doesn't faze us French people. It's kind of different.
Oh, that's... Modesty. Come on.
All right. Well, we have got plenty of Nintendo games to talk to you about this week. In fact, New Business is all Nintendo games. And I'll kick it off with Armillo or Armillo.
It's new probably eShop Armillo, game. Right? It's a little armadillo. Know.
The R are silent.
Well, I don't know. It's actually pronounced Milo. It's that Peter Molyneux game.
Shut up.
It's also a great chocolate drink.
Yeah. Anyway, Armillo is a Wii U eShop game, indie title. It's only right now about $5.99, I think, in the U.S. It's really cheap, one of the cheaper eShop titles. And it got a pretty positive review on our side. I think it got an 8. And Connectivity did a segment last week where they talked a lot of positive things about it. I don't think I like it as much as they do, but it is good. It's kind of an odd game. It reminds me a lot of that Sonic mini game that I think was in Sonic 3, where you were running around on the globe, you know, and it was that weird, almost not Mode 7 because it was Genesis, but it kind of similar to that, where you saw Sonic, but he was like running on top of this giant sphere, and you sort of rotated the sphere around him to try to collect rings
and you would and run into a bumper and then you would be running backwards.
Exactly.
Yeah. I hated that game.
There were boost pads and rings all over the place you were trying to get. So Armillo is kind of a whole game of that. It obviously runs and looks way, way, way better than anything the Genesis could do. But like it's that kind of perspective, you know. I mean, it's like you're looking down. I've heard it compared to Galaxy, Super Mario Galaxy, but really doesn't play anything like Galaxy. Galaxy is very sort of free roaming, and Armillo is a lot of parts of the game seem to be sort of on tracks. So you'll go in these sections where there'll be speed pads that'll boost you, and it's very Sonic like. And there might be branching paths through this stuff, but you're moving through it pretty fast, and then sometimes it'll open up and there'll be a little combat section. Combat isn't that great, frankly. And you can jump, and the jumping's a little strange because you're sort of jumping in towards the screen, because it's doing this kind of weird top-down 3D perspective. And that makes it a little bit difficult to control where you're landing sometimes, but, it's okay. I mean, It controls pretty well, except in the 2D levels. Those are pretty bad, and I think the review on our site sort of backs that up. Especially, it has the 2D levels are, they really do feel kind of like 2D Sonic, except not as good. And they have a double jump feature, and the double jump, I'm like, it makes you use it on a lot of these levels, but I'm always kind of afraid to use it. Because, you know, in a lot of 2D platformers, a double jump will make you feel like you have more control over where you're going to land and where you're going to go through in the air. And in Armillo, I think it makes me feel like I have less control over what's going to happen. Because it has this, like, don't know, there's something about the way it boosts you way up in the air, like really fast, but also like it's very hard to steer yourself on that second jump. And it's given me a lot of trouble. And the game has like interesting mechanics. There is one of the weird things about it that I certainly wasn't expecting is that there's these portals in the main levels, the 3D levels, and you'll go in these portals and it'll put you in like an alternate dimension version of the level that you've been playing. And you can only be in it for a few seconds, like maybe 20 or 30 seconds before you die. And the goal of being in this other part of the level is that you can find the key over there that you need back in the main part, or maybe you have to sort of bridge and go around to a different section and come out a different portal, and now that lets you skip over to a different part of the world. I mean, it's an idea that you've probably seen in other games. I mean, even A Link to the Past works in a similar way to some extent. But it's interesting. It's kind of odd. It feels a little out of place in this game, I guess, but it works. But, yeah, I mean, the game, like, in a lot of ways for an indie game, the production values are really impressive. Like, the menu, the user interface is really snazzy. It has this kind of camera zooming from one solar system to the next as you change levels. And, it has a shop where you can collect orbs and spend them for new abilities. I mean, there's some serious ambition here for sure. It feels a little unpolished, and I've heard that they're, are some problems with the programming in this initial release, and they're already working on a patch that's supposed to improve it. So maybe it'll feel better to me once that patch comes out. For right now, I have to say, like, I'm not enjoying it as much as a lot of other people seem to, and I don't know exactly why that might be the case, but the game hasn't really clicked for me over the course of, I don't know, about
lack
2.5 hours.
Probably is probably your answer.
Oh, no, it's not that. I mean, you know, I like it. I spent my own money on it. I would like to be enjoying it more than I am. I think there's a lot of cool ideas here, but it feels a little unpolished to me, especially in the 2D levels are like, they look kind of cool, but they really don't feel that great. So that makes me wonder if it's, you know, something weird in the frame rate, because I know the game is, I've seen it kind of stutter a couple of times. Even on the 3D levels, it'll just kind of freeze for a second. It looks like that effect when you get your gamepad out to sort of the edge of the range, you know, on the wireless, and sometimes the screen will just freeze for a second before it catches back up. Skype does the same thing, as a matter of fact.
I had noticed.
Yeah. It's happened a lot tonight. But it'll do that even on the TV screen. So hopefully that stuff is going to get sorted out soon. You know, the game is a couple bucks off these first few weeks, but honestly, I would recommend waiting until they fix it. And then maybe I could give you a little bit better idea of what it has going for it. But for right now, it's not totally clicking with me. It's too bad. Mm-hmm. I hope it'll get better.
I was watching, I think that Curtis Bones put some video footage of the gameplay over the part of connectivity where they talk about the game. So it's pretty fun to watch. I assume that the footage, that like this whole video is on the YouTube channel for NWR. But yeah, check it out. Like I was looking at the 2D levels and they looked confusing as hell. With the whole level spinning around you, like actually like the first the bonus stage from the first Sonic, and just, I don't know, like with a
I think
really,
that
really...
maybe was just one particular bonus level.
Oh, okay.
Because they don't all do that. There was one where I got a power-up that made me really big for a certain period of time, and that let me jump higher, but also it changes the weight on the character, and it makes him harder to control. In all the cases, I feel like those 2D levels are zoomed in a little too far, and they give you a timer, which is like barely enough time to get to the end, even if you know what you're doing. So like those bonus levels, I mean, they're required. They're not bonus levels. You have to do them. And, they've taken me a few retries even, mainly just because I would get to an area and it looks like you can explore a little bit or there's some orbs. And I don't know if those are supposed to be off the beaten path or are those leading me towards the exit. So there's some, I think some design issues here that would be fine if there wasn't a timer. Mm-hmm. But considering there is a timer that has a very real chance of killing you before you get to the end of this level, I feel like the path forward should maybe be a little more clear, because otherwise it starts to feel like trial and error. And that's not really what you want in a 2D platformer usually. Mm-hmm. So yeah, kind of a mixed reaction on Armillo. I think there's some promise to it. but I can't wholeheartedly recommend it based on what I've played so far. But admittedly, the guys on Connectivity have played a lot more of it than I have. A couple of them have beaten it. And I listened to that segment. I think you'll find it very interesting. And the video, which we'll link to in the show notes, that Curtis did. Curtis is one of the people talking about it in that segment. And I think Armillo is a little bit hard to explain what it is. It helps if you see a video of it. And watching a video while you hear those guys talk about it might actually be really ideal. So definitely check that out if you're kind of intrigued by it. And then maybe you can keep my comments in the back of your head. I think they'll echo some of it, but they definitely like it a lot more than I did. So I will continue playing it, see if that changes.
Cool.
Yeah, for now, let's move on to John Lindemann, and I'm really excited to hear you talk about this.
Yeah, actually, you know, Guillaume inspires me in so many ways. Lifestyle.
I do that to a lot of people.
Yeah. Lifestyle, diet, etc. But in this case, he inspired me with a video game called Xenoblade Chronicles. So I decided to go back now that
Guillaume,
I have my Wii U.
Guillaume inspired you, not Johnny and I, who talked about this for a combined about 200 hours on the show.
No, I mean, it comes in many forms.
He was only inspired by a fellow slacker on the game.
Yes, exactly. Oh. You guys were well
Canadians.
Ahead of the curve.
Canadians.
So,
what can I say? Canadians can't even play a game when it comes out. Come on. Get it together.
We're just being polite. We don't want to rush the game. We don't want to make it feel kind of cornered in. Play it
Great.
Right away.
Great.
You know, usually we leave it sealed for several months/years, but anyways. So I actually put some real time into this guy because, you know, once again, this game's up in my hall of shame, like many other games. But this is another game where I bought it, played it for a grand total of 24 minutes. Because that's how many minutes were on my save file.
Can you even get through the opening video in 24 minutes?
I managed to. I probably just walked around a little bit in Colony 9, really didn't do any quests or anything like that, so I really didn't have much experience with it. So I said, okay, I'm just going to start all over. Because that's what Guillaume did, and Guillaume is my muse in this whole endeavor. So I figured I would match him and start all over. And so I think I've put about 6 hours into it, but a lot of that, out of Colony 9 yet. I'm at Tephra Cave. I've done all the side quests, which just takes you way out of the way. So really time has no meaning in this game because you can just waste time doing whatever.
Right.
So yeah, and it's, you know, it's interesting because, you know, I have to echo Guillaume's concerns about the inventory management, not so much from the standpoint of not having enough room for stuff and having pages of stuff, because like James, I'm one of those people who, as soon as I get something new in my bag, I have to analyze it, break it down, you know, figure out whether or not it's good for my characters, and then it's gone as soon as I get to the next town. I'm obsessive about that, so I keep my bags completely clean at all times.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you're saying, if I can intuit from what Skype is giving us, that you engage in fridge cleaning?
All the time. Constantly,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's probably born out of did you ever play Dragon Quest when you were younger?
Yes, I did.
That series will train you to do that.
Yeah.
Because you have to.
Yeah. I mean, I've always been like that with RPGs because I've always, from way back in the day, I've played RPGs where, you know, hey, if you run out of bag slots, sorry, buddy. Sorry, can't help you. So
yeah,
I always.
You get so many items when you combat these enemies. Like, I can't do it. What I do usually is that I wait until I reach a boss. And I get my ass kicked, so then I change my gear, I order... You can sort your equipment with various data, but I sort them based on their sale price, mm-hmm. assuming that the pricier ones are going to be the best ones. And
yeah.
Then I just look at, you know, the effects, like, okay, do they improve or lower my stats? And that's the only time that I look at the inventory. Otherwise, I'm going to go nuts.
Yeah.
Like some creatures, like some battles, you'll get two swords as a reward. And where are they keeping them? Like, were they just like the swords just sticking out of them? Like,
internally,
what's happening here?
That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. It's
not exactly Monster Hunter.
By the way, if you're keeping swords internally, consult your doctor.
Yeah. So, I mean, the one thing that I think they could do better is. I mean, I'm trying to think which RPG that I played relatively recently, like in the past year or so, and I don't know if it's maybe Dragon Quest IX or Final Fantasy XIV, but when you buy a new item, it automatically asks you if you want to equip it. and it's a small thing, but man, is it handy, because 9 times out of 10, when you buy something new, you want to equip it on your character right away. Yeah. So, and I find I do a lot of, you know, buying several items. I have to back out, quit out of the shop interface entirely, go into my character's inventory, equip the item, you know, compare it to something, make sure it's the right one I want, equip it, and then go back into the shop. And there's no obvious way. I don't think there is a way, but if there is, there's no obvious way to kind of streamline that process and do everything from within the shop interface. So that's something I hope they improve in the next game, is just making that easier, just streamline that whole process, just so if you buy something, you can just equip it right away. And also make it a lot easier. What a lot of MMOs do is they let you kind of like mouse hover over an item, and it'll show you, it'll do a comparison over what you have equipped and you know, what the item has. And they kind of do that in the shop interface, but it's still kind of, I don't know.
Yeah, it's not really clear.
No.
Well, what I can say, John, is that after playing the game for 80 or 90 hours, you'll become really efficient and really fast at navigating these menus just from force of practice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it doesn't forgive the design decisions, but, you know, at least there's not a ton of loading time, for instance, when you bring up these menus.
Yeah. I just always find it interesting with a lot of these RPGs, where there are some RPGs out there that do it really, really well, but they just... You always see inventory is treated in a completely different way from RPG to RPG. Some of them are archaic. Some of them are really streamlined. It's just, it's always interesting to me because it's such a huge component of the game.
The crazy thing is, I mean, Monolith Soft has made lots of RPGs.
Yeah.
The vast majority of their games have been RPGs.
Yep.
So you'd think they would have maybe gotten better at it. I mean, and I'm not saying Xenoblade's, you know, menus and user interface are archaic, but they're not exactly modern either.
Yeah. And the thing is, they're not as optimized for controller control as they could be. Right? Now, in another place, you know, speaking of the UI, I feel that quests and the quest list could be handled better. I feel that they could do it could be much more efficient. I mean, one of the things that I really miss from World of Warcraft is for any quest that you get and any quest that you track, if you hover over a monster, so say if it's a kill 10 rats quest, well, when you're walking around in the world, if you hover over that monster, the name of the monster will pop up, but it will also come up in red, meaning that that's something that you should kill. It's something that is helpful to kill for you particularly. And it also shows the quest that it's tied to. And that's something I have a problem with in this game is I'm like, all right, well, I think I have to kill this beach crabble, but I don't know if it's that, or is it the stone crabble or this other crabble or something like that. So, and then you have to go into the quest menu, look at the quest, because there's not really like a pop-up that has a little blurb saying, yeah, this is to kill 5 of these. I find you always have to dig into the quest to find out exactly what it is. Like, you have to go all the way and do a deep dive into the quest text to find out exactly what you have to kill. Now, it does keep track of stuff automatically, but that's not surfaced anywhere in the UI.
And so, like, that's only when they actually tell you the right info. Like, there was a quest where they wanted me to kill a junk crabble, I think. And it said, like, in the quest description, it was like, yeah, it's around Colony 9. So I walked all over the place, swam all over the place. It's a really big area. Never found the freaking junk crabbles. Turns out they were in Tephra Caves. Pretty deep in Tephra Caves. And it's just like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, I had the same kind of thing with certain creatures. I think the Brogs, where they only came out between, I think, like 9 at night and 3 in the morning. So, there's nothing really to tell you that anywhere. You just kind of have to figure that out, or like I did, go to a wiki and just say, where the hell are these Brogs?
At which alternatively, you can just say, you know, there's a lot of mini quests in this game. I don't think I need to solve all of them.
Well, that's not the problem.
Was my approach.
Yeah, I mean, but I'm a completionist, so I go through and I do all that stuff, right?
Man, this is a dangerous game to play if you're a completionist.
I realize that now because I'm sitting on 6 hours thrown into this game and I'm not even really out of the starter area.
Right. I mean, it doesn't surprise me that you could spend that much time in that area because it is big. It's really, really big.
And a lot of it was spent swimming around trying to find stuff, not knowing where it is. Right.
Right.
So
yeah, I think it might behoove you to play through the story for a while, get some momentum up, also get more characters because that'll make the combat more interesting and enjoyable.
Yeah.
And also I think it'll they'll explain some of the systems of the game to you as you go along, and it might make some of these things less frustrating, especially once you get a feel for the world and how to use the map and go out and find these things and what kind of areas are they likely to put stuff for you to find or to put the enemies you need to kill. Like, that stuff may feel a little bit better as you get deeper into it.
I'm not a completionist usually in these games, but you know, just by doing it, just by trying to grind this way for you know, to prepare myself for that spot where I had trouble the first time I got to it you know, when I played it years ago. Wow, that was convoluted. But anyway, just doing the side quests, like, eventually, I thought that they started paying off, not in terms of loot or anything like that, but in terms of story. Like, I've had some really cool moments where I know that there's a revelation coming up. I think I know what it is. But there's been a huge clue that I got through doing side quests. So, like, even before the story got to a certain point, I'm like, oh, well, this is kind of big, and it's just like this lady giving me a quest who's telling me this, telling me this, and I'm like, well, should you be telling me about this this guy that anyway. So that's pretty cool, and also I got one of these quests that give you an extra skill tree, so that's pretty far into the kind of the line of quests that you have to do in Colony 9, and she's just like, hey, I've seen you help a lot of people, and I just want you to listen to my story and like my dilemma, and then so you listen to her, and eventually you have to decide her future, like should she be you know, like continuing, like working at her shop or something, or become a soldier. Like, she's really good at doing one thing, but she's really interested in doing this other thing. And I'm like, wow, that's pretty cool. I don't even know you, and you're probably going to disappear as soon as I tell you do this or that. But it was still a cool moment, and maybe it didn't make me feel attached to that character, whose name I don't even remember, but it didn't make me feel like, okay, Colony 9 is a cool place where, you know, Shulk belongs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is that the side quests, the reason why I'm doing them, I think, is they're grindy, but they don't really feel grindy because they don't feel like a waste of time because they have that story element, right? They all have these little side stories tied to them. So it's not just like, yeah, go kill these 10 things for experience points. There's going to, you know, it's not like there's just some trumped up, you know, flavor text there for the quest, but really you're just going there and randomly killing 10 things just to get experience. It doesn't feel like that because there are these story elements tied to them. So I think that's why I care, and, you know, because I want everybody to get along, you know, I want to develop all these friendships just to see how they kind of play out. So yeah, I think that's kind of like an underrated like part of this game is just, you know, developing all of these different affinities between the characters. It really makes you interested in characters that you otherwise wouldn't care about.
Yeah.
So
it's a good hook.
I think doing all the side quests is a legitimate way to grind in the game. Mm-hmm. And as James and I have discussed at length, you will have to grind in this game. It is a big part of the game, for better or worse. And, you know, and I think if you guys are feeling fulfilled by this, then that's good. I mean, that should be a way for the game to keep you engaged, as you do need to build up these characters over time with sort of things off the main story. For me, it was a lot of, doing the, isn't there a bounty system?
I have not encountered it yet.
I don't know.
That may just be a certain group of side quest missions
like that
stick out in my head.
I mean, I haven't played this game in almost, 3 years now? But yeah, there's something like that. And there's,
my memory's not
it's,
the best.
It's basically
either,
like a list of enemies that you need to knock out. And there's not a huge reward for individual things, but it's there. You can do it. I mean, I found that really I had more fun. If I ran into a quest, great. I would look at the quest log and see, all right, does this look like something I could do easily, or am I going to have to run around fields and kill shit for a while?
My favorite was just where you go collect things. And I think it gets to what I really love about this series, which is really just kind of running around and looking at the world and exploring it and going and really like getting like very thoroughly checking out an area to find the little secret tunnels and places that take you behind the waterfall. Mm-hmm. That was really exciting to me. And I think I was hoping, especially after some of James's early comments on the game a couple of years ago, I was really hoping that you could actually use exploration itself as kind of yet another alternate method of sort of leveling up and grinding.
And you can to an extent.
Not as much as I'd like. And in the new game on Wii U, what I would really love for them is to sort of boost up the amount of experience you get from exploring and to make that more of a viable way to play the game where, you know, you fight when you need to, but you're not really going out and seeking combat just for the purpose of leveling up. Mm-hmm. I feel like there could be a different way to do it that, you know, if you want to do more combat, you can do that to level up. If you don't want to do as much combat, then you could, you know, have other methods. And I think, you know, the side quests are yet another way, and those might involve all kinds of stuff. It might be, you know, going back and forth between these two towns and just talking to certain characters over and over. And maybe you give them a little bit of money every now and then, and then poof, you solve their problem and you get a bunch of experience. I think that's a great kind of element to have in the game. And it does have some of that.
Yeah.
But I don't know how effective it is overall. I didn't really try it.
Yeah, more ways to gain experience is always good in my book, mm-hmm. so that it doesn't force you to play a certain way. Because nobody really likes to grind. It's not really that fun. So
right. That was one thing that appealed to me very strongly about Guild Wars 2. I still have yet to ever play the game, mm-hmm. but I was hearing that you get a pretty significant experience rewards for exploring, which is, you know, very much like Xenoblade, but maybe balanced a little better.
Yeah, you do. You get
it's very appealing to me.
Yeah, you get experience for a lot of things. You get experience, and this isn't necessarily exclusive to Guild Wars 2, but Guild Wars 2 I think does a really good job of it for exploring. You get XP for crafting stuff. You get a whole bunch of there's several different ways aside from just grinding to actually level up your character. So it's good. But just going back to the map for a second, I do like the warp points. Those are really helpful. But mm-hmm. man, do you ever get mounts in this game ever? So that you can go up faster than a run.
Nope.
See, and that kind of drove me crazy because I was like, okay, first off, I just wish there was some sort of auto run button that I could push to just have your characters just run. Because there's a lot of times when you have to go around and kill stuff and you just have to run there or swim there. And so mm-hmm. you have to sit there basically pushing the joystick forward for like a good 5 minutes while your character like runs or swims. I was just like, oh my God, is there an auto run, please?
The closest you'll get to that is gems that are called Quick Step.
Yeah,
and so you equip that on your character, and it improves it. Yeah, makes you run faster.
Yeah, so
in the game world, so
that would be fantastic in the next game. I would love for them to have mounts or some other way to get to.
Well, there's the mechs. You can fly, dude.
Yeah, yep. that's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping that those
transform into bikes.
Those are your mounts. That would be awesome.
He straight up turns into a bike and then goes over water because that's what bikes do.
That'd be sweet. Yeah, yeah.
If
so that
fast
I mean,
enough.
Yeah, so that to me would solve a big issue with the game. Not really an issue, but just something it would be a lot more convenient because running around can be kind of pain in the ass.
I think probably most people who play Xenoblade will agree with you at some point along the way. And for me, it's something I got over. Mm-hmm. I think it was just I got used to it after a while. And to me, the somewhat slow pace of getting around the world became almost sort of part of the pleasure of it. It felt like I was just sort of ambling around and, you know, like you don't want to explore at hyper speed. You want to be slow enough that you can actually appreciate this stuff and see it from different angles.
Yeah. I mean,
where I'm at too. I just, it's part of the whole feeling of, this is kind of a relaxing game to play that I was talking about, last week.
Yeah.
Kind of like Wind Waker. You're just like, well, you're not really in any hurry. It's mm-hmm. just, it's just fun to walk around or explore.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing I think it's kind of to me, it's sort of one of those good problems to have because I think it speaks to the strength of the game world, right? You want to go everywhere. I mean, I want to explore every single nook and cranny of Colony 9, even though I know Colony 9 is just a starter area. And theoretically, it's not even that interesting, but I think it looks great. I mean, and I know there's even better stuff in the game, but I mean, there's still a lot of times where you can, you can go up to the top of a cliff and overlook the entire Colony 9 area. And it's just like, wow, that looks really, really good. And so anything to me to make that quicker, like that, you know, the exploring the area quicker would be extremely helpful.
Yeah, well,
right
I agree,
past
and I think
Cave.
Monolith agrees.
Yeah, right past Tefra Cave, I think you're going to have your first oh wow moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
Yeah, the big field. But also I think as you play the game more, and it sounds like you will, which makes me super happy, but, mm-hmm. as you play the game more, I think also you'll become more familiar with these different zones, these different environments, even the really big ones, and you'll learn to sort of plan a route more efficiently to get around and do the things you want to do. Partly because, yeah it takes a long time to get around. So you want to make sure that if there's three or four different things you want to do in a given play session, you try to find a route that will sort of carry you through those without having to backtrack a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Now, can you ever get an item that you can bind to an area? You know, so you can warp there? Like something that you can, I would explain it in the terms of MMOs I've played, but you guys wouldn't have played any of them. But something where you can say, okay, well, this person's house, I mean, usually, I mean, in an MMO, it's like either at an inn or some notable landmark. I mean, I know there are landmarks, but are there any, can you make your own landmark, I guess is what I'm asking.
No, but there are so many landmarks that I think they're usually within sight of each other. Mm-hmm. So I think you'll very rarely find a place where you would, you know, where you can't, once you have discovered all the warp points, I mean, that you do have to discover them for it to be selectable.
Yeah.
But you can fast travel, I think, within a 2 or 3 minute walk of just about anything in the entire game. All right. Well, let's move on to what Guillaume has been playing, another very interesting game.
Yeah, well, get this. I'm playing an indie 2D platformer that's a love letter to 8-bit gaming.
Dear God.
You? Dude, you've changed.
Yeah, I know. And they're so rare, you know. It's as if we,
I think,
you know,
six
it's been so
came
long
out
since
during
we,
this phone call.
Yeah, yeah, basically. I'm playing 1001 Spikes, which is... okay. See, that's the biggest problem with this title. Like... with this game, the title is instantly...
Oh, the title is garbage.
The title is instantly, you know, putting off people who I think would actually like it. I'm not... James probably wouldn't. But, I mean, the game
is... I've played it. I know exactly what this game is.
Oh, really?
That's what that groan was for.
Really? Okay, yes. Because I'm just... I've been playing it, and I've been surprised at how enjoyable it is. I don't usually like sadistic platformers, You know, my threshold, like my criteria for calling platformers sadistic is pretty low. Like, I've never even looked at I Want to Be the Guy. But I'm talking about, like, Super Meat Boy. I didn't really enjoy it. I thought it was a little bit too punishing. Hmm. And even
you think 1001 like, Spikes is more forgiving than Super Meat Boy?
Well, we'll get to that. but yeah, and like even games like VVVVVV, I didn't really enjoy the way that some challenges had you... you really had to be way precise to get through like very long series of spikes and, you know, admittedly, like those were areas that you didn't need to get through for the main game, for the main quest. But if you wanted to explore all the map, which the game encouraged you to do, I don't know, like those segments really pissed me off and I never really completed the game as far as I remember. But yeah, like 1001 Spikes has actually been more, gentle than I expected, and it's really, really cool. The game starts off, you know, like with a tutorial, and I have died in the tutorial, but maybe like a couple of times, and after that, you learn those lessons very quickly, and you get past the tutorial, and the ramp up in difficulty is still like very, very fair, I thought. There's about 30 levels in the main game, and I made it to level 20, and the most I've died in a single level was about 25 times, which I think is about, I don't know, like it's about the number of times that you would die in a hard Mario level.
Could be,
know?
Yeah.
So that was up until level 20. Level 21, unfortunately, which I just played before we recorded this, I ended up dying about 90 times. And then I tried level 22.
90?
Yeah.
90?
Yeah. And it was extremely fast. So it looks like the game really ramps up in the last third.
This is more familiar with my experience of the game, which is stuff like, oh yeah, there's actually a spike there when you jump on that box.
Right, well, okay.
Have fun.
All right, so the game is entirely that. You know, the game is always surprising you with traps and always trying to... always putting spikes that spring up where you least expect it. But I think that it does it in a very smart way, and it really does, I don't know how, but it always does such a good job of making, you know, that one spot on the map really inviting and make you feel, you know, like let your guard down and think, well, nothing can get me there. And then you get to it and whoops, oh, you're dead. You know, like some stone statue just spit a dart at you, or, you know, spikes rose out of the ground, or, you know, the block that you were on fell off into the lava. And it's just, but every time that happens, I'm just like, oh, damn you, game. You got me again. You know, like it's kind of a good feeling. Well, not good, but, you know, like it's like, oh, you know, like you got me again. Oh, game.
Oh, and you then, got me again.
Yeah, and then you start over and you're armed with an additional piece of knowledge, and you think, well, I'm not going to get, you know, it's not going to get me the next time, but then you might not even make it to the place where you were at because you forgot that along the way there was this other trap that existed. But eventually, you know, like it might not be a constant progression, but eventually you're going to make it farther into the level and you're going to complete it. And there's just such a satisfying feeling. I've really been, I don't know, like, I don't know if I should say this, but, Shovel Knight, as enjoyable as it was, I thought that it didn't really coddle players too much, but I think it was a little bit too, forgiving, for my tastes. I thought that,
all right.
I don't know, like
throwing it down, huh?
No, but the checkpoint system and everything, like, I don't know. I ended up dying maybe... what did I say last episode? Like, I died a little bit over 100 times, which is a lot. But, I mean, it's apparently just as much as you can die in an advanced level of 1001 spikes.
In one level. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, it's just, you know, 1001 spikes is more difficult. But it doesn't make me too frustrated. I think the difference between 1001 spikes and games like Super Meat Boy, the reason why I don't get frustrated as quickly is also that I always feel like, you know, even though some of the traps I could not have foreseen, and, you know, I was sure to die that first time that I reached them, afterwards, I always know what to do. You know, like the solution to not getting killed by the trap is always obvious. You might have a little bit of difficulty, you know, pulling it off, like making a jump at the right time or something like that. But it's always like very, very straightforward what the solution is. Whereas in something like Super Meat Boy, sometimes I felt like, well, I don't even know, like these blades are moving up and down and I can't even tell what the timing I was supposed to have is, you know, like I wish that my problem were just like, oh, I trying to pull this off, but I also don't even know where to start sometimes.
Yeah.
So so in other words, the transparency of the simple obstacles in 1001 spikes makes it feel like, you know, if you fail, it's entirely on you.
Yeah, maybe not the first time, because the first time, yeah,
that's,
it can be.
I wouldn't say that's true, because the game does do shit like, you know, oh, actually, behind that box is a thing that's shooting darts. You just can't see them because the box is in the way.
Yeah.
I think I explained it as well as I can. Like, the traps can be unfair, but once you know about them, you also know what to do about them. So, I don't know. I think it's very fair, you know, past the point where you learn where all the traps are. And so that's the main game. There's 30 levels. It sounds short, but you're going to be playing those last 10 levels for a long time. But also, there's a lot of modes to unlock. And actually, you unlock them very quickly by getting some Golden Skull collectibles throughout the main game. And those extra levels are actually easier. And so if, you know, if you make it past the tutorial for the main game, you will unlock a bunch of modes that you can probably enjoy more. Like, there's this Tower of, what's it called? This stupid name, like Tower of Nanar, that you can play. It's mostly like this, well, it's vertical, it's a tower, and you've got 9 lives, and you have to make it through each level with those 9 lives, and then they get replenished with each new level. So it's very fair, and there's way fewer traps, and it's less about like, aha, gotcha, you know, and it's more about kind of more normal platforming. So that's pretty fun. It's also pretty short. There's something called the Last Levels, which, based on the name, again, it made me way more scared than I needed to be. And you've got this kind of map a la Ghosts and Goblins. And it's kind of this other quest that you can take on. And right away, like right at the beginning, you've got these different costumes unlocked. And so in addition to having like the main character and his standard abilities, you can have a Mario costume or a Mr. Video Game costume, as they call it. And when you have it, you can jump on enemies and stomp them. If you're up close, you can smash them with a hammer, and you can also throw fireballs. Wow. And when you start the level with that costume, you've got like kind of a ta-na-ta-ta-na-ta, and then kind of a, you know, Super Mario Brothers 1 take on the 1001 Spikes music. So it's pretty cool. So you've got an homage to Mario, and you've got also like Castlevania in there. It's pretty cool. You've got some Ghosts and Goblins, of course, where you've got the suit of armor, and if you get that once, you actually have a second life, but you're in boxer shorts. And you throw swords just like in Ghosts and Goblins. You've got kind of a Contra-ish or Ikari Warrior kind of suit where you can shoot a machine gun, and you can also hang on to ledges. So you've got these very, very different abilities, and it kind of changes up the way you play the game. So yeah, I've been really enjoying the game way more than I thought I would, and I would actually recommend it, but. A word of warning, the Wii U version right now has some severe bugs, including some that won't allow you to see like the opening cutscenes for some of the bonus characters that you can unlock.
Hmm.
So that you know, like that's kind of a pain in the ass. Like your Wii U just freezes and you have to restart, and afterwards you can select the level after that cutscene, but it's, you know, it's a pain in the ass.
Wow, that's pretty bad. I know they are patching in off-screen TV play.
They are, yeah. And right now, only the gamepad.
I'm sure they'll fix the bugs as well. But
yes,
big patch coming soon.
Yeah, and they're going to add more control options, because right now it's just a gamepad and the Wii U Controller Pro.
And this is basically an NES game, so you could easily play this with a Wii remote.
Actually, I'm not so sure.
Really?
Like I'm looking forward to seeing how they get over that problem, because the game actually has two jump buttons. One for jumping one square high, one tile high, and the other for jumping two tiles high. And that kind of plays into the way that you go through the levels, you know, like there's kind of a little bit of puzzle solving to do as you go through the levels, you know, like try to get always using the right jump for the right moment. But yeah, I don't know how they're going to get over that with, you know, a sideways Wii remote.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, you can always use the big A button. It's just in a somewhat awkward spot.
Yikes. Yeah.
Or the B trigger. That's not great either, but it can work. Yeah, but I'm sure they'll support, you know, classic controller for Wii remotes and maybe GameCube controller too. Well, let's move on to what James has been playing.
So I have been playing, and first I want to start off by saying we in no way encourage piracy on this show, and before we hear anything about it, I have already procured a copy of this game, even though I can't effectively play it. I have been playing the Ace Attorney's Investigations 2, specifically the translated version that was released a few weeks ago. This was a complete fan translation of the second Edgeworth game that Capcom never released outside Japan.
Hmm.
So it was a long time coming in terms of this translation, but when it was announced that they were doing it and they had one chapter ready, I thought, well, this could, you know, oh, it'll be, you know, a couple months and they'll have the whole game done and I'll play it then. And that stretched on for a while, and it went quite a while. And then suddenly they just kind of announced, hey, we're done. So that happened, I want to say that happened right after E3, so I was still kind of in that post E3 phase that I didn't really want to sit there and play that game specifically. But now that that's kind of passed, I went ahead and I went through the incredibly painful process of getting it running on a cart that I have that I used for other Japanese games that I've also acquired copies of, thank you.
You're really covering your ass here.
Oh, well, I mean, I fucking paid Capcom money for a game that they refused to give me, so yeah, I deserve to cover my ass.
Everybody deserves to cover their ass, James.
There you go, yep. Except our listeners who are currently in their bathrooms. So, I mean, if you've played the original Edgeworth game, it's basically, it's more of an adventure game than the Ace Attorney series, where you're literally controlling a character and interacting with parts of the environment, and there's not really the court section. It's kind of, they've mixed everything up together during this investigation phase. It's, you know, it's third person instead of first, and besides that, it's a fairly similar title. You just have to kind of do everything at once versus there being this clear delineation between court and investigating.
Well, at once, but it's really, you know, chapter after chapter. I mean, you have to investigate all of an area, and then you're going to get quizzed on it. You know, you're going to have the interrogation or the kind
of... Well, so I found that there is stuff popping up as you do it. So maybe you do investigate an area for a little bit, and then you talk to somebody, and maybe you go into this thing they call, you know, word chess or something like that, where you're essentially debating somebody and letting them hang themselves, and you're trying to lead them on so they answer questions in a way that proves they're lying to you.
This might be paced a little bit differently between the first and second game, because you haven't played two, have you, Guy?
No, just one.
So they might have changed it slightly.
It is slightly different, but it's a very similar title. I'm only through the first third of the second chapter.
The translation's working for you? I mean, that's so key to this series. It's all writing, basically.
This was my biggest fear, and I was reticent to go through the chore of getting the flash cart working, because my DSi XL's been updated a couple times since I last used it, and getting, you know, the ROM patched and installed and playing correctly and going through the process of, well, maybe this patcher and this version of the ROM don't work as well as this patcher and this version of the ROM, so let me try this combination. And just going through that so I had a stable version running on my machine. And my concern that the translation was going to be literalist or spotty or not infused with the spirit of the Ace Attorney franchise was pretty deep. And all in all, I mean, Greg, like I said, I'm only through the first, you know, chapter and then a third of the second one, is that they did the translation itself is spot on. There's a couple spots where, you know, they use like an onomatopoeia that's maybe not written correctly, but Capcom has spelling errors in the original game, so
yes,
you know,
they do. There's a lot of text, but still,
yeah. And definitely in the latest game, Jesus, like there's so many typos.
At this point, they're self-aware. They know that the first three Ace Attorney games are littered with typos, and they're just like, yeah, let's put some in.
I feel like, yeah, I wonder if there's even a sense within Capcom that typos are part of the charm of the series and that people expect them.
Well, so, yeah, I mean, that comes back to when I spoke about this when we discussed E3, I was talking with the guy who was doing the demo for the Ace Attorney collection, Phoenix Wright collection, and I asked about, are the typos fixed? And he reiterated, this is the same translation as the original games. Like, they know what's up. They know that they really kind of screwed up the first three games, and they're just, and that the fans of the series have a certain love of irony that they just keep it in. So I'm impressed with the translation. Like I said, there are some weird things, like when they denote laughing, sometimes they write it weird, and I'm like, that's kind of odd. And they still consider this to be, quote, the beta of the translation. But things like newspaper articles, they've gone and they've created the art in English.
Oh,
so
wow.
You can actually read them. They've replaced the voice samples for, you know, like when Edgeworth objects or when he, you know, does the hold it. They've replaced the Japanese voice with the one from the other DS game. They've replaced the graphic that comes up for hold it with the one from previous games. They've put a lot of work into making this game English. And it feels... If this is how Capcom had released the game, they didn't release the game, but if they had released the game in this way, I would have thought that's a weird way to denote laughing, but otherwise I wouldn't have thought anything of it. That's the only thing that would have jumped out. And because of this, I'm extra on edge looking for this stuff.
Also, did this translation team, did they localize the game? Like, did they localize Tokyo as Los Angeles
this game, the people who did the translation, and I would say translation slash localization of this game, are hardcore dyed-in-the-wool Ace Attorney fans. And it comes through in how they – in what they did with the game. Most characters that are recurring characters, even – one of the things about the Ace Attorney investigation series that I like is that you see these characters that maybe only have, you know, one appearance in a trial in a previous Ace Attorney game, you know, in the mainline series. You see them come back up, you know, a couple years down the road. And so the case I'm in right now, they're in a jail where somebody got murdered in jail. And one of the witnesses is Frank Sawit from the first game. and of course he is a witness in the first game and his last name is Sawit and he's a witness in the second game. Of course, it turns out he's actually, you know, there's all kinds of weird stuff with him in the first game that they got and they actually, it shows up in his characterization in this game. And some of that stuff was probably added during the localization of the first title. It's probably not a direct translation. They've had some character names. So if you aren't familiar with the Ace Attorney series, they love their pun character names to the point where it is, there are moments where it is infuriating.
And the 3DS one, it gets pretty ridiculous.
Oh, I mean, the worst character, his last name is El Dune and he's a noodle salesman. And his hat is a bowl of noodles mm-hmm. and his hair is noodles. I mean, it's bad and it hurts. And they've had a few characters that they've done a pretty good job with so far of giving them pun names. I mean, because obviously this is a new character. The Japanese name won't make sense in English, as right. It won't be a name.
They've gone
and come up with a pun that works for that character, and they've done a good job with it. So I'm legitimately impressed with the work they've done. It feels like an Ace Attorney game or an Ace Attorney Investigations game. There's only one other one. It's got a nice pace to it because you're not bouncing back and forth between court and interviews. It's very constant. You do your investigation. There's a dead body in front of you. You got to poke some things. People talk about it. And then you're given the opportunity to go, hey, something doesn't add up here. What is it? And you'd say, this piece of evidence doesn't match with that thing I'm seeing right now. Okay. People talk some more. And then it's time to do vocal chess. And then it's time to debate somebody. And then it's time to go to the next area. It feels much more brisk than the more, leisurely Ace Attorney series, but it doesn't have those moments of incredibly high tension that the court system does. Where in that series, it's this long build up for maybe, you know, 15 minutes at the end of a trial where stuff's just popping off, as it were. This sort of gives it to you in pieces throughout the whole experience. And I kind of like that. I kind of like that breakup, that difference, that differentiation. I feel like I know that the Investigations games didn't sell great in Japan. I know that the one that came out in the US didn't sell great. So I understand why Capcom didn't bring the game to the West. At the same time, I feel like when you have a fan base that stuck with you through all of these games, there's a certain sense of doing right by that community that maybe they could have done a better job of doing. And I don't know what that means. I feel like they did with the fifth game.
Yeah.
Where they said, look, we can't sell this game retail in the US. We just can't get the profit on it. Let's just go ahead and find a way to get it on the eShop.
And of course, people complained immediately.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, I would have much rather had a retail copy of that game. I absolutely would have. But at the same time, they made the effort to at least, if not give us the best case scenario, at least do right by the fans of the series.
Yeah, they absolutely did. And I could see Investigations 2 coming one day through a similar means. And I don't know if Capcom is the kind of company that would do this, but I mean, there have been a few examples of publishers picking up a fan translation and making that an official release. And this group did such an amazing job with the Ace Attorney Investigations 2, you know, maybe that's a remote possibility here.
That would be the ultimate act of them doing right by their fan community.
Yeah, that'd be incredible.
I mean, they would have to do work on this translation. They would have to sit there and go through and make sure that there's nothing real weird out of character for the stuff.
You could throw maybe an editor at it, but that's a lot different than putting a whole team.
Yeah, and maybe they do some stuff like change some character names to worse puns because Capcom's localization team are monsters.
Extra typos.
They are the worst kind of monsters when it comes to puns.
Yeah.
And But, you know, I'm enjoying the game so far. I've probably got another, you know, 10, 15 hours with it. I'm happy I'm getting to play it. I was worried I'd never get to see this one and that there would always be this one hole in the Ace Attorney series I never got to experience. I would really appreciate it if they would go, if, well, it's not under their control, unfortunately, if Nintendo would go ahead and frickin' release Leighton versus Wright here, please. Eventually, because it's taken a real long time to come to North America, and I don't know what the hell the holdup is.
Isn't it October, something like that?
Yeah, it's like, why? Because this game's been out in Europe for a while now. What? Why? Why are we going through this? This is painful. So I would really appreciate it if somebody could expedite that, please, because that game is done. In fact, it's done in languages we don't even need it in. So if you would please. But I'm glad that once I complete those games, I will have gotten to experience the entire franchise for what it is. And what it is kind of awesome. And I'm, you know, when I played the remake at E3, I thought, there's no way in hell I'd buy this. But now I'm like, well, maybe I'll buy it. I don't know. I will say, just as one last aside, the music in Investigations 2 is nuts in the best way. I love it. It's great. So even if you don't feel like going through the process of getting a copy of the game, patching it over to English, you know, getting it on some way you can play it via an emulator or a DS, I'm using my XL. You know, go ahead and listen to the music if you like Ace Attorney music. It's nuts. And I love it. It's great. And like I said, I've bought a Japanese copy of the game, so step off.
So step off. All right.
It'll show up eventually, but I wasn't waiting for that.
Well, I'm going to step into another world to close out new business, and I believe this will end the episode as well. But
now, is this another world like a three-screen game? Because I think that's all I've seen when I tried to play it back in the day. Just you walk three screens over and you die.
No, that's when most people die and give up.
Yeah, so Another World HD came out on Wii U a few weeks ago. It's also on 3DS, and it's now out on PlayStation 4, 3, and Vita, I believe. So you can get this on a lot of places. I think it's on Steam even. But it is the HD remake of the game that you might know as Out of This World. That's how I originally saw it. I think that was the American name for the, at least for the console release. This was correct. Out on Super Nintendo for sure, probably Genesis and PlayStation as well back then, because it was, the console port was just kind of like almost cross-gen, like 1994, 1995, so it was on a lot of platforms. I never really played Out of This World, but I remember I had friends who had it, and I watched them play it a good bit, and I didn't understand it at all. I thought it looked really cool, and it still does. So the game was rotoscoped, which at the time gave it really smooth animation, even though the graphics are really kind of simple. They're, mm-hmm. they're meant to be evocative. That may be a kind of overly generous term for it, but the backgrounds are often very, very sparse, and the character designs aren't much to look at. But because of the rotoscoping technique, it did have a very distinctive look to it, and the character moved in a way that you could really connect with this character. I mean, he moves very smoothly, and it was in its own weird way. It was kind of a graphical showcase at the time.
Well, it's kind of like Prince of Persia, right? They use the same technique.
Yes. Prince of Persia was rotoscoped as well. And what that means is that they essentially took like film or even photos of people and then animated over the top of that. And so you get some you get characters that move very lifelike human ways, which at the time especially was almost disturbing, you know, because like you'd never seen video game characters move like real people.
It looks almost inorganic in the movement, even though it's super organic.
Right.
I think the fact that it looks like a Dire Straits video probably hurts things a little bit in that respect.
But what it means also in terms of gameplay is that you're kind of, I don't know, when you run and when you walk, you're kind of stepping always on the same places, right? Like, I mean, like it's not a game where you can move one pixel by pixel. It's always like you always have to take a full step.
Yes, it's more Star Tropics than Mega Man.
Yeah.
Yes, that's for sure. It kind of works on tiles, even though you can't really see them. But you develop a feel for that over time, and you get a better feel for how far the guy's going to move when you push the controller. But yeah, Another World, so the HD remake is actually really nice. They've done a lot to the graphics. It's curious. I mean, they're still not very detailed, but they've smoothed them out a lot, and they've made it look more like, I guess you might say, kind of vector art, you know, kind of like a Flash game. And that, I don't know if that's what they actually used or not, but you know, it still has these kind of broad, straight strokes to it. And not a lot of detail in the character models or anything like that, but I think they did a nice job of making it look a lot newer and crisper, and to have it actually not look absolutely terrible on high definition displays. But they've managed to retain the original art style and sort of keep the simplicity of it that did make it really stand out at the time. So they didn't do too much to it. I think they did just enough. It kind of reminds me of the Secret of Monkey Island remakes that were done a few years ago, which I played on the 360, but they were out on a lot of different platforms. And I thought they did a nice job in that game. Actually, they did the first two Monkey Island games, but they updated all those graphics and put them in HD, but they worked really hard to retain the art style, and it still felt like Monkey Island. I think Another World or Out of This World, it still feels like that. It still looks right. It just looks way better. And it has that thing where you can push one button. I think it's Y on the Wii U version, and it'll flip back to the old graphics. And at any time you can compare in real time. And the old ones look horrible in comparison. So they definitely did a nice job. And the game, it looks really cool. You know, the music is very nice, I think. I really like the sound effects in the game. The gameplay is where this game is going to be incredibly divisive. And it's not a game that I can just run around and say, hey, you should really check this out. It is old school in a way that it is almost forgotten. I mean, the only thing I could really directly compare it to is probably Dragon's Lair. In that,
you know, I would say it was almost anachronistic when it came out. Like
In the early 90s, it was a little bit, yeah.
It's a very odd. I've played the original Super Nintendo. It's a very weird feeling game.
Yes.
Like even when it came out, and I played it in 95, 96, very close to its release. It feels super strange, mm-hmm. and it's kind of something you have to get over. It's a weird mix of, like, I'm trying to think of what there, because there is platforming involved, but it's kind of like like almost adventure game style puzzles.
It is, it's a point and click adventure in which you have direct control over the character.
Yeah, right. But
that's the way it's structured.
And as opposed to unblocking a gate, you just die if you screw it up.
Right.
Right. Like, you might have like a creature chasing you, and it's so you run the other way, but then there's a pit, and you can only jump into the pit and die. But if you happen to notice that there was some sort of rope hanging from the ceiling, then next time you're at that part, you'll think, okay, I need to jump and catch a rope, and then the creature will jump in the pit and kill itself.
Yep.
You know, like, there's a lot of, I don't know, like, yeah, like, there's a lot of puzzles like that.
Trial and error, really.
Yeah.
There's definitely some trial and error. And the game is very methodically paced. So, you know, you are generally meant to kind of take things slow and look at the environment, try to figure out the best thing to do. But sometimes they'll have things chasing you and you have to go fast. And, you know, it doesn't demand a lot of quick reactions, but, you know, the game can get frustrating at times, for sure. And part of the, you know, it's both good and bad. One of the really interesting things about it is that the idea of the game is that you're this guy, you're like a researcher at an energy research facility. It's very like the intro to Quantum Leap, kind of, is what it looks like. But this lightning strikes the facility while you're doing this weird dimensional thing, and you get sucked into another world. And from there is no text in the game, period. There is none. You have no idea what's going on. It doesn't tell you to do anything. The only way I learned to even get – so what Guillaume described, that monster chasing you, is basically the first puzzle in the game. And I couldn't even really get to him without having to check the menus to learn how to do the controls, because the game doesn't tell you anything. Later on, you pick up a gun. And the gun, it shoots when you push a button. So it feels like an action game. It kind of looks like an action game. But you can't really use it that way. Instead, you know, every now and then an enemy will walk over from the side and you just have to shoot him before he shoots you. But most of the time you're using the gun to create a shield for yourself, or you can charge up a big blast and use that to melt walls and to activate certain puzzle type elements in the levels. So even with the gun, you're basically using it to solve puzzles more than you are actually doing any kind of action scene with
it. The late game feels very different from the early game, at least in my experience. It feels like early on it's very much this process of just figuring out how the hell do I play this game.
Yes, definitely.
And then in the late game it starts to feel closer to, I would say, to an extent, to things like NES Prince of Persia, which is how do I clear this room versus just what is this thing and why am I here?
Yeah.
It's very much both. The gameplay sort of reduces down because you spend a lot of time going through this, a much less, you know, I seem to call this like a prison area.
Yes.
And you're moving through stuff that's way more enclosed than the early part of the game where you're just outside. And also your brain is now conditioned enough to understand, no, this game's just weird. Just deal with it. You'll get through this. It'll be okay.
It is totally bizarre, but I kind of like it. I've only played it maybe two or three sessions, but every time I start playing it, I get really sucked into it and I want to keep playing it. And I think the first time I turned the game on, I played it for 3 hours. And I think I'm terrible at it. Like, I really don't feel that I grasp how to play this very well. But there's something about it that I find very addictive. And also, I like the world. I mean, I think it's an appealing environment that's been created here. It feels very alien in the sense that you walk into a room and it's full of stuff and you don't know what any of it does. Mm-hmm. And I want to find out. And the game really is about finding out what all that stuff does and how do you use it to help you proceed.
Yeah,
I really enjoy that.
Design overall has moved away from that.
Yes, definitely.
Like, oh, absolutely.
Big time. Like, that used to be the prominent way you would play games.
Well, but see, this game was never not weird and outside of the bounds of normal game design. Yeah. I mean, it was always...
You're right.
Just weird, bizarre stuff.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Maybe not so much for European players. It's a French... it's a French game. Maybe on PC they had games that were more like this.
But he,
they did, definitely.
Keep in mind, at that point, you would have been dealing with lots of stuff like Amstrad and things where there's no such thing as a good game on the Amstrad.
Well, the thing is, in Europe,
here come
though,
the emails.
Like, the tastes in Europe were like a little bit behind
Johnny,
the West.
There will be no emails defending the Amstrad. So, see, I hate to break that to you.
Yeah, I mean, at the time this game would have come out in the West, those games still would have been popular in Europe, right?
Hmm.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
From my little understanding.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I can say that when I first saw my friends playing it on Super Nintendo, I thought it was extremely strange. And when I downloaded it, it was one of those things, I wasn't even totally sure why I was downloading. I think I had just picked up all that digital deluxe credit and, you know, I had it burning through my screen. And I said, I got to spend this on something. And it had just come out. It's also really cheap. It's like $8, I think. So... Yeah. It's not a big, you know, it's very hard to predict, I think, whether someone is going to like this or whether they might get kind of into it and sort of force themselves to learn how to play it. But it's a low enough investment that, you know, like if you buy it and you hate it or you never even figure out how to get past the early part, it's not the end of the world. I mean, it is certainly a game that you can cheat very easily. I mean, you can look up game facts or YouTube.
Just watch
a
video of somebody playing it.
Yeah, I mean, in general, there's one solution to these puzzles. So if you're willing to be spoiled just to get through the one part that's keeping you back, it's very easy to you know, get past an area. I mean, it's not a game that really relies on Twitch skills or anything like that. It's just knowledge. It's just doing things in the right order. It's learning how to use the different parts of the environment. But, you know, I grew up on stuff like King's Quest, so, you know, and to a lesser extent, the LucasArts games. This is kind of like those, but with no menus. So it's even more mysterious, but I think that kind of works in a puzzle game, which is basically what it is. It's a point-and-click, you know, adventure-style puzzle game. I find it very intriguing, and I'm enjoying it almost in spite of the game. But maybe because of it, maybe it's just working on me in a more clever way than I'm realizing, but I have found it strangely addictive. So I'm going to keep playing it. I would guess it's not that long, but
it's not
really cool. Like it's just a strange thing. And you know, especially if you're way into stuff like Toki Tori 2, which is similarly, it's a puzzle game that really has no text, and it just kind of throws you in situations and forces you to figure out what the hell's going on with all this stuff. How am I supposed to manipulate all this stuff? I mean, Another World is definitely, it has a certain, you know, lineage with that. So, you know, if you're way into Tokitori 2, you might check it out as well. But it is on Wii U, and it looks nice. So I think there's a lot to be said for that. It's a good gamepad game, actually, because it doesn't have a lot of detail. I mean, there is no user overlay at all. There's no HUD. There's no numbers on the screen. There's no words on the screen. So having a small screen is not that much of a detriment. In fact, in some ways, it probably makes the graphics look a little bit better when you shrink all that stuff down a little bit. Might even look incredible on 3DS. I don't know if it has 3D parallax display. That'd be really cool in this game, actually. The game, I think this was its 25th anniversary since the original PC version.
Probably, yeah.
Or at least the 20th anniversary. Maybe it was the 20th anniversary. I don't know. But it's kind of a cult classic. It's not a universally loved game, but it was a game that a lot of people played when they were a kid. I'm sure it confounded a lot of them, sort of like Myst, you know, like it looks really cool, it sounds really cool, but it's impossible. And yet people have this weird love for it because it was so unusual at the time. I mean, it really doesn't look like anything else. I think it holds up. In some ways, it might work better now than it did back then. Now it feels experimental, you know? Now it feels like an indie game. Like, this is one of, like, weirdo things that comes out on Steam. You hear people kind of talk about it. It has this strange story. Like, it almost feels something like that. So in a way, maybe it's kind of come back around and now it's cool again. I don't know. But I'm enjoying it, surprisingly. I think it's pretty cool. So that's Another World HD or Anniversary Edition, whatever they call it. And I think that's going to do it for our show, guys. We're going to have a little shorter episode this week because we're recording in a off schedule. Lots of weird stuff going on. But anyway, thank you, everyone, for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. That is our goal every week. We certainly enjoy making it for you. And if you have any questions or comments about the games we talked about today or anything else going on in the world of Nintendo other than competitive Smash Brothers, you can send those to rfn at nintendoworldreport.com. Thank you, everybody.
I hope you enjoyed your shower.
And we'll see you next time.
Later.
Bye.
Bye.
Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com.
This week, we have a feature, our top 5 games so far by the Nintendo World Report staff. Golf. It's effing golf. Mario Golf is the number 5 game of the year for Nintendo consoles. Mario Kart 8 is number 2, though, so send us your death threats. Jeez. We have an interview for the game Midora with its developer, Mir, from Epic Minds, by Aaron Brown. Aaron sat down with a guy named Mir to talk about his Kickstarter project, Midora, The Legend of Zelda and Secret of Mana-inspired 2D action game, quote-unquote, with RPG elements. Basically, you hit shit with swords and control water.
There you go.
TLDR.
Next up, we have a review for, we talked about it last week, Transformers Rise of the Darkspark on 3DS. This review is by Don Koopman. Last week we had listeners send us existential questions about liking bad games, in that case, Rise of the Darkspark. Turns out Don thinks the 3DS game is okay. I'm okay with this, and hope Shad hears this so he can feel better about his choices. With that said, if you like the Transformers movies, boom, boom, flash, flash, bang, boom, onomatopoeia. Yeah, this is the real-time, no, turn-based strategy game for 3DS Way Forward that somehow is based on Transformers.
Holy
Check
shit.
Check it out. I know. We also have a review for Bike Rider DX2. This is also on the 3DS, and the review is by Alex Kalafi, an endless bicyclist. I don't know, but it has multi-jumps, and Alex seems taken with this title that he glowingly describes as, quote, more than just another bike game.
because there's so many other bike game? Yeah, there's so many other bike games on the market.
It's more than that other bike game. Feel motivated by that glowing commentary and read much more praise in his review.
We have a preview this week of Strike Force Fox, 3DS by Neil Ronahan. Fox, 2Xs, is a game where you control a helicopter to save civilians and not terrorists. Neil has a mix of hands-on thoughts and exclusive info into this curious upcoming eShop title. We also have a feature, The Cultural Differences Between Nintendo Pocket Football Club and Calciobit by Don Koopman. Do you want to learn about the differences between two versions of a 3DS soccer game, neither of which is currently available in North America? Damn right you do! Don has you covered.
They changed the graphic style in this game. There's a lot of changes. It's a nice side-by-side comparison. It's an interesting article.
All right, and we have a review for the Wii U version of Guacamelee Super Turbo Champion Edition by Clay Johnson. This latest version of Guacamelee, the first on Wii U, had exclusive rights to craziest version name until Capcom announced the Dead Rising 3 DLC. Good news, though, this luchador-themed adventure game is actually really solid. Drinkbox Studios moving into the suplex on Capcom. Oh god, right into the mat. 1, 2, 3, that's it! Capcom is for sale! It's not for sale. Nice. Then we have a review of Gardening Mama 2 Forest Friends for 3DS by Alex Kulafi. It's Gardening Mama 2. What are you expecting? Mama won't fix this. And we also have a feature, Super Smash Bros. For Wii U and 3DS, E3 2014 Character Guide, that's like the longest article name ever, by E3 staff. Yep. We played a lot of Smash Bros. E3. I mean, we played a lot of Smash Bros. E3. We pulled our thoughts on each character available in the demo.
James and I both contributed to this feature, I believe.
We did.
Yeah. So it's kind of like, hey, like character dossiers. Like, yo, these are the characters we think really suck, and here are the ones we think are really good. And it's nice because there was so much content in that game that no one person really could do it. So we teamed up. So... you can check out that feature, all the new reviews, and of course, news, videos, everything else, other podcasts over at NintendoWorldReport.com. All right, guys, well, let's talk about
Scott
video
goes to
games.
Hell. Yeah!
Anyone saying anything right now?
I'm just, I try to pause for a couple extra seconds because I'm not sure if you guys are done talking or if I'm just not getting it.
Let's just go. Let's just, whatever happens, happens.
Yeah, you're not getting it for sure. I mean, I'm not saying anything, but the thing is I'm not hearing what you're saying
you
either,
so. You don't get it, Johnny. God.
All I just heard from John was, I mean, I'm not saying...
Yeah, I heard the same thing. I heard the same thing.
Awful.
So, yeah. I can't tell when you guys are done talking, and I don't want to just talk over you.
I'm never done talking, so that's fine.
James is the only one that I can hear clearly, and...
Well, yeah. Because I'm hosting the call.
Yeah.
I
hear
James. I mean,
James,
Johnny, I can't hear you at all.
So
I'm not actually saying anything.
I'm guessing most of you can probably hear me clearly. It's the whole... interplay thing. When stuff gets bounced around, it gets real goofy.
Oh, it gets real goofy.
Okay, did you just do that on purpose?
Prove that I didn't.
Goofy. That's awesome.
Jesus Christ.
This is the worst.
Our fifth call, and this is probably the worst
one
yet.
Can we start again with trying to install Google Hangout? I'll host the damn call.
This is a nightmare.
Jesus Christ, Scott.
Okay, we're all still recording, right?
We are.
Yeah. Oh, I think we just leave this in. This is the intro of the episode.
Okay.
This is what happened. This is reality.
I'm afraid to talk.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, we're
fine.
Right,
so far,
right
things
sent.
Yeah, right now it's great.
I'm hosting the call, so I'm going to sound fine. Mm-hmm.
We had a brief moment there where, right as John said, now it sounds great. Skype said, fuck you. No, it doesn't.
Yep. Yeah, they're monitoring this call, obviously.
We're still recording.
Yeah.
Well, let's just go.
All right. Yep.